This podcast is for general informational purposes only and not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The medical contents and information provided are solely the opinion of the guest speaker. Lung and Learn. Interesting topics about all things respiratory.
Welcome to this edition of Lung and Learn. I'm your host, Dr. Anna Spearin. Day to day, I talk to physicians about current respiratory publications and their impact on clinical practice. Today, I'm here with Dr. Meyer Balter from Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto, and we're going to be chatting about the use of eosinophils as biomarkers in COPD. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Balter.
My pleasure.
As many of you may know, eosinophils were incorporated into the 2019 GOLD guidelines as biomarkers for the use of inhaled corticosteroids in COPD. However, there's not that much definitive literature out there covering the topic. Therefore, we've asked Dr. Balter to give us his perspective. So, Dr. Balter, if we're talking about eosinophils analyzed from both the blood and the sputum, could you help us establish A, is there a correlation between the two? And B, which is the better biomarker for physicians to be using?
So the correlation between the two really isn't known. There are a couple of small studies suggesting that the two correlate very well together, but a large multi-center study did not show any correlation between the two. It's not feasible for the vast majority of people to measure sputum eosinophils, but if you want to guess what the most robust measure would be, it would probably be sputum eosinophils. Having said that, I think there's enough information to allow us to use peripheral eosinophils as a guide to therapy.
So if you're following the new guidelines and you think, okay, let's use peripheral eosinophils to guide therapy, is there a certain cutoff that you're looking for to determine whether or not a patient needs inhaled corticosteroid added?
I think it would be great to have a dichotomous value where above that you need inhaled steroids and below that you don't, but we're far from doing that, and I don't think that there's a magic number. I don't think that eosinophils by themselves is going to be a good enough biomarker to help definitively allow us to pick an inhaled steroid for therapy or not. I think you can make a couple of clear assumptions. One, the higher the eosinophil count, and certainly above 350 or 400 micromoles per liter, the more likely it is that inhaled steroids would be beneficial for our patients with COPD. Similarly, with very low levels, unmeasurable or under 100 or 200, it's likely that inhaled steroids wouldn't be that valuable.
Okay, so then we're looking at eosinophil counts around 350 for ICS use then?
Again, you want to combine that with other factors, such as frequency of exacerbations. So the more frequent an exacerbator is, combined with higher eosinophils, the more likely it is that that person would benefit from inhaled steroids.
Right. Okay. So this is interesting to me because if you're looking at the low end being around 100, not so great for ICS, and ICS use potentially starting in the 300s, what about that gap between 100 and 300, 350? What are we doing with those patients? What factors do we need to consider there?
I think you have to look at multiple factors. You have to look at their history, not only of exacerbations, but see what their childhood was like. Were they atopic? Did they have asthma? Could this be a possible asthma COPD overlap person? In which case, I might try them on inhaled steroids. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to be too quick in terms of jumping on that 300 number as the magic number, because I suspect that's probably a little bit too low, and it's probably closer to 370 or 400.
I see.
The higher you go, the more comfortable I am saying that inhaled steroids would be useful. That 150 to 300 range, I think at this point, is not terribly helpful in terms of guiding our decisions, and we have to use other factors like exacerbation history and previous respiratory history.
Right, that definitely makes sense. Now let me ask you this. Should we be considering the consistency or stability of eosinophil counts at all? Like, for example, if a patient shows high eosinophil counts, would we continue to see the high reading over and over again? Or can eosinophil counts be affected by things like a cold, the time of year, the time of day, where it might be lower in the morning, for example? Should we be testing our patients repeatedly?
It's not really known whether you have to look at multiple eosinophil counts. There are a couple of very large population studies done in the United States from huge databases such as Kaiser Permanente showing that the peripheral eosinophilia is quite consistent in about two-thirds of patients. So two-thirds of patients are consistently above 400 or below 400. There is some variability noted with acute infections. So if you were going to make decisions, you probably wouldn't do it at the time of an acute exacerbation of COPD or an episode of bronchitis or other upper respiratory tract infections. However, in a stable state, I would not repeatedly measure the eosinophils. I would do it once. If you were very suspicious, you may want to do it again a few months later, as we do with asthmatics, where it's variable over time. But I think that a single measurement for most of our patients will suffice.
Okay, so let's say you took that single measurement and patients have a high count, but they're not exacerbating. So my question one is, would having a high eosinophil count alone be a reason to add an ICS? And question two, can we use high eosinophil counts to predict future exacerbations?
There's sort of two different questions rolled into one there, and I'm not sure they're mutually exclusive.
Fair enough.
I think there's pretty good data, again, in population-based studies, so you have to be careful about interpreting those, that higher eosinophilia, particularly in ex-smokers, predicts exacerbations. By itself, I would never make a decision about starting someone on an inhaled steroid if they were well controlled symptomatically and had no history of exacerbations, no matter what their eosinophil count was. So I think those are separate things.
I understand. So what do you think about the future exacerbation risk then?
I think during an acute exacerbation, that high eosinophilia clearly predicts the patients who are going to benefit from oral steroids during that exacerbation. So that would be the only reason to measure it at the time of an exacerbation.
Okay, so then for the opposite patient, the patient with low eosinophil counts that does have a history of exacerbations, is an ICS still warranted?
That might be a group where I would say maybe inhaled steroids aren't the right drug for that person. Maybe we need another anti-inflammatory drug, perhaps a phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor, perhaps a macrolide. But at this point, I don't think there's any information to help guide that decision. And guidelines would still suggest that frequent exacerbators be given one anti-inflammatory drug, and none of us are sure which one would be the best.
I guess there's just not enough information about it yet. And there's so many treatment options, which is kind of a nice segue into asking you about antibiotics or corticosteroids. So can blood eosinophils help us determine whether an exacerbating patient needs to be on an antibiotic or an oral corticosteroid or both? Do you think we could potentially use this information to phenotype these exacerbations?
I think that that is true to some extent. I think that the decision regarding antibiotic therapy should still be based mostly on the presence of sputum purulence or not, with purulence leading to antibiotic usage and non-purulence not leading to that. I think there's pretty good evidence that if you don't have any eosinophilia at the time of an exacerbation, you're less likely to benefit from oral steroids. But I don't think it's enough that if a person was ill and their eosinophils were lowish to say, well, I'm not going to give this person prednisone. I would probably raise my threshold to give prednisone based on their degree of airflow limitation. So in other words, the worse their airflow limitation, the lower my threshold would be to add in oral steroids at the time of worsening, no matter what their eosinophil count.
Okay, so that's interesting, looking at airflow limitation to guide your decisions. So now let's look at a scenario where you do initiate a patient on ICS. Do you continue to monitor their blood eosinophils?
I don't think there's enough in the literature to guide us. Personally, when I put somebody on an inhaled steroid, because they're a frequent exacerbator, I do not follow their blood eosinophils because that's not going to change what I do.
Okay.
It might be different, somebody coming to me on an inhaled steroid who doesn't have a history of frequent exacerbations, where I'd be willing to withdraw the inhaled steroids, and then I might monitor their eosinophils. Although, again, there's not a lot in the literature to help guide me with that decision.
Fair enough. So we've been talking a lot about scenarios where you've already been familiar and comfortable with a patient. You follow them for a long time. How about someone that's brand new? Let's say you inherit a new patient. They're doing pretty good, aren't exacerbating, and they're on an ICS. Could eosinophils tell you that, hey, this patient really needs to be on that ICS? Or could eosinophils somehow tell you that the ICS is the reason that the exacerbations are controlled?
When I inherit a patient who is on an inhaled steroid and they've been stable, I try to get from the patient what they were like a year, 2 years, 3 years before, ideally before they were put on an inhaled steroid. If they tell me that they never exacerbated previously and the inhaled steroids were put on for symptoms, that's a patient I will almost immediately take off inhaled steroids and try on single or double bronchodilator. If the person's not sure about their exacerbation history, it's very difficult for me to confirm through other mechanisms whether or not they had exacerbations previously. Mm-hmm. I am likely to try to take patients off inhaled steroids if there's not a clear history of exacerbations before or asthma features in childhood. What I've learned is not to be afraid to take patients off inhaled steroids. They are not going to end up in hospital. They're not going to end up in the emergency department. But you can bet they're going to call me within 3 to 5 days of stopping that inhaled steroid, stating that they felt better on the drug, and I just reinstitute it.
Well, it's great that you make yourself so accessible to your patients. So let's continue to follow this new patient of yours. You've now determined that, yes, they're stable on an ICS. And they come in to see you for a routine follow-up, and they bring some blood work with them. And their blood work still says the eosinophils are high. Does that indicate that you need to increase the dose of the ICS?
There is absolutely nothing to help me with that decision. A lot of the information about blood eosinophils was done through retrospective studies. Even the studies that looked at this prospectively, some of the recent large clinical trials in COPD, did not adjust in doses of inhaled steroids based on eosinophils. In fact, all the studies just looked at eosinophil at the entry to the study and did not monitor it throughout the study. So there's nothing to guide me.
So what would you do?
I would not adjust my doses of inhaled steroids based on eosinophil counts. I make my decisions regarding therapy based on clinical factors. So are patients still exacerbating? I don't think we have a lot of evidence to suggest that higher doses of inhaled steroids are better than lower doses of inhaled steroids to prevent exacerbations. So if patients are still exacerbating, then I'm going to look for other factors. Are they still smoking? Do they have other risk factors for exacerbations? Or maybe I need another anti-inflammatory medication.
There really are so many factors to consider here. I just have one last question for you, specifically about eosinophils as biomarkers in COPD. So we know that eosinophils are also present in asthma. Do you think that patients with high eosinophils are truly COPD patients, or could they also have a touch of asthma?
I suspect if you had 6 respirologists, you would get 8 different answers for that question. From a personal standpoint, I do not think that peripheral eosinophilia defines asthma. I think asthma is based on history and reversible factors. I agree that one can get fixed airflow obstruction with chronic disease, but that's where the history becomes important. I would never use eosinophil counts to say somebody had asthma or COPD. In fact, if you look at large population studies and look at eosinophil counts in patients without obstructive lung disease, with asthma and with COPD, they're virtually identical as a mean. So the eosinophils are a marker of something, but I don't think a definition of a disease.
That's really a great way of looking at it. Dr. Balter, these have been some phenomenal insights into what eosinophils are, how they interact with ICS, what they do, what they don't do. We really learned a lot from you.
Thank you very much.
And that concludes this episode of Lung and Learn. If you're interested in hearing more physicians discuss respiratory topics, including some staggering statistics about pneumonia, please listen to our other episodes in the Lung and Learn series. Until next time, thanks for listening.